This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump and his Democratic rival Joe Biden are both going on the offense, campaigning in states they're trying to flip during the general election, now just over 2 weeks away. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has details.
I love going to churches.
President Trump began his Sunday with a visit to the non-denominational International Church of Las Vegas, where Pastor Denise Goulet told him she'd had a vision.
At 4:30, the Lord said to me, I am going to give your president a second win.
The president made this appeal.
You better get out because we have a group on the other side that doesn't agree with us.
Hello, North Carolina!
Joe Biden addressed supporters at a drive-in rally in Durham, North Carolina, mocking the president's optimistic statements on the coronavirus pandemic.
My grandfather would say, this guy's gone around the bend if he thinks we turn the corner.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Thousands of people gathered across France on Sunday to support teachers and defend freedom of expression after the killing of Samuel Paty, a history teacher beheaded by a suspected Islamist on Friday. From Paris to Marseille, large crowds gathered quietly, pausing regularly to applaud, hold minutes of silence, or sing the national anthem. Politicians from across the spectrum showed solidarity by adding the various events after, or attending the various events, after a killing that has shocked the whole country. A 47-year-old Paty was killed outside his school in a Paris suburb by an 18-year-old attacker. Earlier this month, the teacher had shown his pupils cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad and class for freedom of expression. This is VOA News. And an effort to counter Chinese influence and build stronger economic and defense ties in the region, Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga made Vietnam his first overseas trip since taking over for his former boss Shinzo Abe last month. There was a welcome ceremony Monday for him at the Vietnamese presidential palace in Hanoi. He's also spending time in Indonesia on this trip. As part of his visit to Vietnam, Suga is promoting exports of Japanese-made military equipment with the signing of a defense equipment and technology transfer agreement with Vietnam. There were tense scenes in the streets of Santiago on Sunday as demonstrators faced off with police on the one-year anniversary of mass protests over inequality that left more than 30 people dead and thousands injured. Protesters threw fireballs and rocks in the direction of police, with officers responding with tear gas and water cannon. Last year's demonstrations, which began on October 18th, raged until mid-December as Chileans gathered nationwide to call for reforms to the pension, healthcare, and educational systems. Bahrain and Israel signed a joint communique to formalize the ties during a visit by an Israeli and U.S. delegation Sunday to broaden cooperation that Washington has promoted as an anti-Iran bulwark and potential economic bonanza. Bahrain followed the United Arab Emirates in agreeing last month to normalize ties with Israel, stunning Palestinians who had demanded statehood before any such regional rapprochement. The accord has drawn anger among Bahrainians at home and abroad. The government of Bahrain, which were a Sunni Muslim minority, rules a Shiite majority population, has said the deal protects its interests from Iran. Dozens of protesters were detained in Minsk Sunday as tens of thousands were marched through the streets of the Belarusian capital demanding the resignation of veteran President Alexander Lukashenko. Belarus, a former Soviet republic closely allied with Russia, has been mocked by strikes and weekly street protests since authorities announced that Lukashenko, who has ruled in authoritarian fashion since 1994, has secured re-election on August 9th with 80% of the vote. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote count is underway in Sunday's presidential election in Guinea.
Many people are fearing because if Alpha Condé win again, he will stay for life. So they don't want the same system run in Guinea.
Tanzania's main opposition candidate gets an endorsement for October 28 election. There's yet another sign of trouble in South Sudan's peace implementation. African asylum seekers are flown to Niger, and Nigeria's army says Operation Crocodile Smile, set to begin tomorrow, Tuesday, is not targeting protesters.
Whether there is no protest or whatever, the exercise will still take place because it is an annual exercise and is going to be conducted for the sixth time in the year 2020.
And what's behind the rise in mental health deaths in Liberia? Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Counting is underway in Sunday's presidential election in Guinea. 82-year-old incumbent Alpha Condé is seeking a third term, which the opposition says violates the constitution. His main challenger is 68-year-old Selou Dalein Diallo, who lost to Condé in the last two presidential elections. A runoff is scheduled for November 24 in the event there's no clear winner. Mamadou Diam Balde is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers in Guinea. He says unlike the violence that marred the campaign period, voting was generally peaceful on Sunday except for minor incidences.
There were 12 candidates who were viewed for the presidency this Sunday. Among them, Alpha Condé, who is again candidate for a third term after changing constitution to stay as a president. Now the vote is finished and we are waiting for the results.
So Mamadou, there was pre-election violence in parts of the country. What can you tell us about Sunday's vote? Was there any violence at all?
No particular violence. Small incident like in Yomou, a city in southern Guinea, where two members of UFDG, the party of Selou Dalein Diallo, were arrested because they were denouncing fraud. And they are in the military barrow of Yomou.
Selou Dalein Diallo decided to participate in the election, even though other opposition leaders boycotted, like Faya Milimono and Sidya Touré. Did Selou Dalein Diallo get any support from other opposition members?
The former Prime Minister, Sidya Touré and Lansana Kouyaté, and also Dr. Faya Milimono, they refused to take part in this election because they said that this election will pave the way for prison for life for Alpha Condé. So they refused to participate in this election. They didn't call for supporting the candidate after boycotting. So Sidya Touré, for instance, said to his militant to refuse to vote.
Guinea has seen turmoil for the past year or so, Mamadou. So what do you see as the future of Guinea now following these elections?
Many people are fearing because if Alpha Condé win again, he will stay for a life. So they don't want the same system run also in Guinea. So people are fearing of violence because the opposition leader said that for this vote, he will be the winner. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Mamadou, for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Mamadou Diam Balde is editor of the Independent and Democrat newspapers in Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Nigeria's army says it will embark on a two-month nationwide exercise dubbed Operation Crocodile Smile beginning tomorrow, October 20th. This is the first time the annual exercise, usually limited to the country's Delta region, will be coast-to-coast. Nigeria has been engulfed in nationwide protests calling for reforms and the disbandment of the police special anti-robbery squad known as SARS. The army warned last week of subversive elements and troublemakers and said it was ready to step in and restore order. However, Army spokesperson Colonel Sagir Musa says protest or not, the exercise was going to take place because it is an annual event.
Operation Crocodile Smile is an annual Nigerian Army exercise which can dovetail into real military operations to checkmate sea piracy, pipeline vandalization, and riverine conflicts, as the case may be.
Some people say that this is about the protests against SARS.
No, like I made it clear in my opening statement, Exercise Crocodile Smile is an annual event, and this is the sixth time we will be conducting it. We had the first one, Exercise Crocodile Smile 1, Exercise Crocodile Smile 2, 3, 4, 5, and in 2020, we are going to conduct the sixth one. So whether there is no protest or whatever, the exercise will still take place because it is an annual exercise and is going to be conducted for the sixth times in the year 2020.
But the army has warned that there are some subversive elements and troublemakers, that it was ready to fully support the civil authority in whatever capacity to maintain law and order.
Yes, there was an earlier press release made by the Nigerian army warning the country about subversive elements or any interest group that is trying to disturb violently the peace and security of the nation. Such kind of individual or group will be dealt with decisively. No responsible army or security agency will hold its arms when there are visibly organized subversive groups trying to subvert the security, peace, and stability of the country. For any peaceful protest, Nigeria Army does have nothing to do with such kind of individual or group. We are concerned primarily about the peace and security of our country.
You said that the exercise would, for the first time, include cyber warfare training. The protesters have been using Twitter. Is this about countering that?
Well, the release is self-explanatory. We are concerned about any idea in the cyber domain that can cause security breach for our country. Issue of fake news has for some time been a serious issue and has the potential to create insecurity. So we want to checkmate fake news. We want to checkmate major forms of cyber, economic, and social crimes, as the case may be.
Thank you very much, sir. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you, and God bless.
Colonel Sagir Musa is the Nigerian Army spokesperson. He was speaking with us from Abuja. Campaigning has entered a feverish stage in Tanzania with 8 more days to go before that country's October 28 presidential election. President John Magufuli, who is seeking a second term, says his development projects will turn Tanzania into the Europe of Africa. Main opposition Chadema candidate Tundu Lissu has promised subsidies to farmers to help stabilize the price of tobacco. Lissu's campaign got a boost over the weekend in the form of an endorsement from Zito Kabwe, leader of the ACT Wazalendo party. Even though Kabwe's party has its own presidential candidate, he said Lissu is the only candidate who can defeat President John Magufuli and his ruling CCM party. Lissu says based on the meetings and rallies he has been having around the country, he believes his campaign is going well.
Well, the campaign is going on very well. We have only 9 days left before Election Day. And on the basis of the meetings and rallies that I have met I have contacted countrywide. I think we have the upper hand. We are winning this election.
I read that your candidacy has gotten a boost from Mr. Zito Kabwe of the actor Wazalindo Party. What do you make of that?
It's a massive, massive endorsement from Mr. Zito Kabwe and his party. And that can only give us a major push in this final stretch. But it is not only Mr. Zito who has endorsed my candidacy. I have with me here Sheikh Ponda Issa Ponda, who is one of the most prominent and most conscientious Muslim leaders in the country, who has also endorsed me yesterday. So major voices in Tanzania are lining up behind this candidacy. And as I said, we are winning this fair and square.
The registrar, is it true that perhaps such an endorsement is against the election rules in Tanzania?
Well, the registrar is talking nonsense. The law does not prohibit endorsements. It doesn't. And therefore, it is not any wrongdoing on the part of Mr. Zito and on the part of Sheikh Ponda to endorse me. So the registrar is just talking nonsense, as always.
Any comment on the suspension in Zanzibar the other day? I know it happened to you. You were suspended off the campaign trail. Another candidate was suspended in Zanzibar. Any comment?
Well, what happened in Zanzibar in the case of Maalim Seif Sharif Hamad, the ACT Wazalendo's presidential candidate, is not a surprise to anyone who follows Tanzanian politics. Mr. Seif Sharif Hamad is one of the most prominent opposition leaders in the country. And he has won the Zanzibari election since 1995, and he's been winning ever since. And therefore, for the Zanzibar Electoral Commission to suspend him from campaigning, there's nothing surprising at all. This is the same commission which basically rigged the last elections in Zanzibar after Mr. Seif Sharif Hamad had won the election. So it is not a surprise at all. It is just one more proof of the unfair nature of the electoral system in Tanzania.
Tundu Lissu is the presidential candidate for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dodoma. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 19. There is yet another sign that implementation of South Sudan's peace process is not proceeding smoothly. Over the weekend, the Office of General Staff of First Vice President Riek Machar's SPLMIO sent a letter to South Sudan's peace guarantors, the Troika, African Union, and the Regional Group Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, reminding them that the future of the peace process is uncertain. Among other issues, the letter says Machar is a victim of the peace process. General William Gadjiev is the SPLMIO military spokesperson. He says Machar cannot visit even his family, let alone his forces, without permission from IGAD.
The purpose of the letter is that the SPLMIO leadership signed the peace agreement 2 years ago, 2018. That led our chairman and commander-in-chief, Dr. Riek Machar Tench Dungong, went to Juba last February for implementation of the peace agreement. The time he came from South Africa, he was not just free, he was in confinement. When he came, he signed the agreement and he was pushed to Juba for implementation of peace agreement. So he has taken long in Juba, at least 9 months from now. Yet we are not seeing things are going smoothly as the way we expected, because we sent our troops to the training centers. Up to now, they have taken long, 13 months in the training centers, but the regime is not willing to graduate them. Also, we have a lot of confusions regarding the implementation of peace agreements.
Is Dr. Riek Machar aware of these letters that you are talking about? Does he approve for these letters to be written?
Yes, so Dr. Riek Machar is aware of all these letters, because he's the chairman and commander-in-chief of the army, and he was chosen to go and visit his people on the ground. It's not himself as Dr. Riek Machar refusing to go and visit his people, but only the peace grantees and the president in the country refused him to go to visit his people. Up to now, so Dr. Riek Machar is willing to visit his people if he is granted a chance to visit us.
You say that the South Sudan government is telling the world, especially IGAD, that Dr. Riek Machar has a hidden plan while Dr. Machar is a victim of the peace agreement. What do you mean by he's a victim of the peace agreement?
Yes, because so we don't see the reasons that Dr. Machar could be kept in confinement again, because he was kept in confinement in South Africa in 2018. When he came to Sudan, he was allowed to find the peace, and he was going to Juba to implement the peace agreement. After now, we thought maybe the time he went to Juba to his warnings, he can be granted the letter of his release. After now, his letter of confinement is still up to now. He's not being released. It means that he's refusing to go anywhere. So he's being kept in Juba. He doesn't go anywhere. The South Sudan government and the Tracker or AU or the South Sudan peace grantees, after now, they kept the Riek Machar in Juba as if he is still in confinement.
General William Gajieff is the SPLM-IO military spokesperson. You're speaking with us from South Sudan. A group of 153 vulnerable African refugees and asylum seekers were flown out of Libya to Niger recently on a plane chartered by the UN Refugee Agency. This is the first life-saving evacuation from Libya in 7 months after the operation was suspended because of COVID-19. Lisa Schneier reports from Geneva.
Among the passengers on Monday's flight are nationals of Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, and South Sudan, including 16 families and 15 children under age 18. Many of the children are unaccompanied or separated from their parents. The UN Refugee Agency reports most of the evacuees had been living in the Libyan capital, Tripoli. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mehecic says virtually all had been arbitrarily detained and forced to live under appalling conditions for some period of time in one of Libya's notoriously bad detention centers.
The resumption of evacuation flights is especially important now, given the volatile situation in Libya, the rapid spread of the coronavirus and its health, as well as socioeconomic impact on refugees and asylum seekers who have found it increasingly difficult to support themselves and their families.
COVID-19 cases continue to rise in Libya. The World Health Organization reports more than 46,600 cases, including 681 deaths. As a precautionary measure, all passengers tested negative prior to departure. The UNHCR says they will remain in quarantine in Niger for 2 weeks and then tested again to make sure they are free of the virus. Mehecic says more than 3,400 migrants and asylum seekers are held in government-run detention centers in Libya. He tells VOA the UNHCR is advocating for their release as many are at risk of serious abuse.
We also advocate for the release of people who might be held in any other possible such facilities, and we know that there are many, given the volatile and fragmented situation inside Libya, that there are probably many other detention centers that we do not also know of.
This is the second evacuation flight this year. The previous one was in February, before the operation was suspended because of COVID-19. The UNHCR has evacuated a total of 501 refugees from Libya this year, including 221 who have been resettled to Europe. Mehecic says the agency is hoping to help more vulnerable people leave Libya. However, he notes much of this is contingent on finding resettlement places and other durable solutions for refugees and asylum seekers who have fled violence and persecution and cannot go home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Deaths from mental health conditions in Liberia, where epilepsy falls under the mental health umbrella, are on the rise during the COVID-19 pandemic. There have been 22 recorded deaths in the first 9 months of this year, compared to 17 in 2019. Emmanuel Mbala, mental health supervisor for Doctors Without Borders, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the reasons behind the uptick in deaths.
We do not have a complete picture of why this is happening, but with the cohort of patients that we have that have some issue with death, we try to investigate to understand why. So because some some of these patients, especially the one with epilepsy, had no access to their medication, so they had increased seizure. So most of them drowned as a result of this. Either maybe at the time they were at the river to draw water or to shower at the river. And when they have attack, no one is there. People are afraid to help them, and they may get drowned into the river. Another thing or reason we saw was because people are afraid because of the stigma. So most of the patients that have other medical conditions were not taken to the clinic, or could be that the family thought that they would not get help.
Has the pandemic made this worse?
Yes, at some point in time in the government facilities, they could get access to some free medication. But right now, or right before the COVID, there's nothing, absolutely nothing. So there's a huge challenge with getting medication. So this, I think, could also be one of the reasons why we have an increase. Shortage of all the supplies of psychotropic medication, anti-epileptic medications. Another thing is, like, for example, during the lockdown, some of those patients that left other counties to come to Monrovia to seek treatment from one of our clinics, because of the travel restrictions, they could not travel to come to get their medication. So they may have increased seizure, which could contribute to some of the death.
Emmanuel Mbala is the mental health supervisor for Doctors Without Borders in Liberia. If you're speaking to Ricky Stryer from Monrovia. Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League, where Ashraf Benchaki headed home in the first half as a disciplined Zamalek side snatched a 1-0 victory over Raja Casablanca to close in on the African Champions League final on Sunday, following in the footsteps of Cairo rivals Al Ahly. On Saturday, record 8-time winners Al Ahly defeated Raja's rival Wydad Casablanca 2-0 at the same Mohamed V Stadium, with the Egyptian duo now looking overwhelmingly favourites to reach the final of the African's Blue Ribbon Club competition. The second legs will take place next weekend at the Cairo's International Stadium. Staying with football news, Nick Mwenwenwa will serve the Football Kenya Federation as the president for a new 4-year term after unanimously being voted in during the elective special general meeting held at the Safari Park Hotel in Nairobi on Saturday. Nick Mwenwenwa garnered 77 votes, beaten closest competitor Ludwig Aduda, who managed 5 votes, while Herbert Machiro only had 3. Boniface Osano and Dan Mule did not get any vote. The elections had been cancelled twice before by the Sports Dispute Tribunal, but were finally given the clear on Friday after Tribunal boss John Ohanga threw out a petition by Sam Nyawenwa and 7 others. In athletics news, Pire Jepchichir broke her own world record in the women's half marathon, crossing the line in 1 hour, 5 minutes and 16 seconds to win gold at the World Athletics Half Marathon Championship in Gdynia in Poland. The 27-year-old Kenyan beat her previous best by 18 seconds set in Prague on September 5, narrowly edging out Germany's Milet Kijeta by just 2 seconds. Yalim Zev Yehualo of Ethiopia was just a further second back to take bronze in an extraordinary close race. It was Jepchichir's second half marathon world title, having previously claimed gold in 2016. In rugby news, World Cup holders South Africa have withdrawn from the rugby championships in Australia, leaving Argentina, Australia and New Zealand to contest a tournament much diminished by their absence. The South Africans cited player welfare concerns because of the delayed start to their domestic competition and uncertainty over government travel restrictions during the COVID-19 pandemic affecting players based in South Africa, Europe and Japan. It means the competition in Australia from October the 31st will be reduced from 12 games to 6, involving only Australia, New Zealand, and Argentina. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good week.